Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by sportsshoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
Every Sunday we get together with a guest from the distance running world,
giving you an insight into the lives and training of some of the UK's best athletes and coaches.
You can listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and all major podcast streaming services.
You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast, where we post about our past and present guests, host giveaways and much more.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Welcome back, guys. Another great guest for you this week. We spoke to Coach Mark Lloyd, who heads up the Battersea Park-based group, Cottage Relocated.
But as Lum introduced Mark, a terrific coach and doing great things down at Battersea Park. And we wanted to get him on because I kind of feel like this is the future and it's important to highlight what else is going on outside of our club structure and elites as well. And Mark was a great guy and he's obviously a really good coach as well. And so enjoy the podcast. But yeah, I think the word he used was they're club agnostic. So they don't care what club you run for. But we're starting to see more of these groups crop up, whether it's based in Leeds or Birmingham or wherever. You know, it doesn't matter what club you run for, but you meet with certain people at a certain time. And in this case, it's Battersea Park on a Tuesday and a Thursday. And I think they get out for a Sunday long run as well over various sort of, big parks in London. And they really are. Mark really is doing a terrific job with these. Like, they must be about 40 or 50 strong. And we just kind of talk about, you know, whether or not it is the future, whether or not he could make, you know, kind of a profit from it. Is it good for the sport? Is it bad for the sport? Does it actually take away from the club aspect of the sport? But in a place like London, you have so many people from all over the UK who end up like working and living in London. And, you know, we talk about the likes of even the Run Yard, Matt Yates's group, they jump in as well. So it's a fascinating group and something we wanted to just kind of air and let you guys know what else is going on outside that kind of elite structure and club athletics. So we'll let Mark do the talking. He does it brilliantly. He really does. And enjoy the podcast. To give you an insight, though, just quickly before it starts, on the level of runners in this group at the top end, for example, Luke Caldwell, 2:11:33. He just ran in Houston, a terrific run on the weekend. He's someone we definitely need to get on the podcast, I think, so we'll probably contact him. But he's based out in America now, but he used to run for Cottage or used to train with them on a Tuesday and a Thursday. So that's the level they got at the front. They got 2:12, 2:13 guys in the marathon up front, and it just filters right down, incredible depth. And like I say, they get various kind of elites jumping in when they can, when they want to use a bit of an endurance session as well. So look, yeah, slightly different guest, but still very good nonetheless. And get out for a Sunday long run, keep warm. And look, cross season's upon us. So I think it's going to be Southern Cross next weekend. We got the Irish Cross this weekend as well. So look out for that McCain Cross Challenge as well up in Belfast. And then Bucks, and they just come thick and fast. Don't forget, Pencilin National Cross, 26th of Feb.
Okay, Mark, first of all, welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on. We're just chatting off air, I guess, a bit about how you're kind of one of those people behind the scenes a bit in our sport. Would you mind just giving us a background to kind of who you are and what you do inside the running world, just to kick us off?
Well, thank you for having me, both of you, and it's nice to be here. My name is Mark Lloyd. I am one of the coaches that runs a group in London, in Battersea Park, called Cottage Relocated. Cottage is how it's generally known. I run the group with a guy called Phil O'Dell. Phil's originally Bedford and County. He's the coach at Cambridge University. He set it all up about 6 or 7 years ago, but I'm the guy that's there every Tuesday night and at most of the races I can get to. And it's been quite an interesting journey over the last 5 or 6 years, I think, as we've evolved and we continue to evolve, bearing in mind we're now all living through this ongoing pandemic.
Cottage, just quickly, Cottage Relocated, how'd that name come about? There must be a story there.
Yeah, it is a story. So Phil O'Dell came up with it. He was running a small group up in Bedford with a guy called Matt James Nielsen Hall, and they would meet at Phil's house, which wasn't a cottage, but they called it a cottage because it was a kind of a play on, you know, the Lauriston Cottage that's on Wimbledon. You know, have you ever been to the Lauriston Cottage on Wimbledon Common?
We haven't, unfortunately.
Does it mean anything to you?
No, we're not very London savvy.
Okay, well, there's this cottage on Wimbledon Common, which is basically dedicated to runners. Right. It's been left in trust and runners just use it all the time. Loads of Hercules Wimbledon use it. And over the years, the guide used to just make tea for runners in there, and it's still there. It must be worth millions. And it's sort of like the home of sort of Wimbledon running. And Phil, so he called his group Cottage after that. And then when it moved to London, we called it Cottage Relocated. But if you see anybody around, they'll have just have Cottage on their shirts. We've got kit, obviously, because you need to have kit. That's where the name comes from. So it's down to Phil, largely.
Yeah, kit is something actually we've been talking about. Me and Ollie have been talking about that a little bit recently and how that could maybe boost British athletics as well, you know, because we were saying, you know, clubs are just so old school and we run in the same vest we picked up as an under 15 boy and we don't buy a new one for 10 years. You know, there's the amount of senior men at the English National who are wearing shrunken vests, you know, or very snug vests. So do you make a bit of money out of that? Or
No. The interesting thing, I think, is there is almost no money involved in the group. Everybody buys their own kit. The kit we use, I think, yeah, we use a provider. We once turned down a kit offer, some free kit offer from I won't tell you who offered it, but I just thought I don't want to spend my life nagging people to wear kit. The other side of it is that, you know, we're a club agnostic, by which I mean we don't care which club you belong to, and people come from all over the place. London's a place where people come to study, they come to work after university, so there's all sorts of clubs involved. And if you came to the group and said which club should I join, we wouldn't actually tell you, because it's up to, you know, it's up to you to decide. So there are all sorts of clubs there, and then everybody has to race in their club vest. So you can't race in your cottage vest. I mean, occasionally people do race in their cottage vest if they're doing, say, a half somewhere, and you'll see people in their cottage vest if they're doing some of these Battersea Park races, the 5K ones. People do wear their cottage vests. But, you know, if you've got a proper race, you know, even national championships, you've got to, as we know, you've got to turn up in your club kit, put black tape over anything that the British athletics considers inappropriate and run the race of your life looking like, you know, like some, like a sort of wrapped up old package. So I know exactly where you're coming from. And I think, but there is a bit of change, isn't there? Because you see the SOAR stuff on Tunbridge AC, the SOAR are putting vests out there. People are wearing better vests. And I've noticed Belgrave seem to have quite a lot of good kit at the moment. They seem to keep changing their kit. And people are thinking about it more and more. I know that Thames Hare and Hounds, we've got a bit of a Thames Hare and Hounds group in our group, but they've all got Tracksmith kit. And so people are thinking, I was talking to somebody the other day about Tracksmith and didn't know what I was talking about, but, you know, and it's expensive stuff, but good stuff. You know, that's a small brand that's doing something out there. And there is, you know, an element of people picking up on it. And, but as you say, the pace of change is inexorably slow. Really slow.
Well, me and Ollie were just talking yesterday, it could be a way that clubs add that extra bit of revenue, you know, instead of just giving someone a vest when they first sign up and they don't buy one. If you did provide kit, you know, if just normal clubs like our local club provided kit, I would spend £25-30 every year on a new vest if it was, you know, latest tech. You know, people spend that on shorts and t-shirts now, don't they? So
yeah, no, absolutely. Although aren't the marathon shorts exorbitantly expensive? I was some of the last
SOAR actually is a crazy expensive brand. I mean, I wouldn't spend £100 on shorts, but
no. Well, as I say, I was chatting to one of the lads who just did Valencia, and he's talking about, you know, this the shorts of which you have to have where you can hang all your or your gels cost a bloody fortune. So I agree with you. I think most of us who get into certainly when I was a young runner, I used to love kit, still do, you know, I still check out shoes and kit, you know, and I'm still interested in it. I think lots of us are. And I think there's also something about the identity it creates for all of us. And we have this in the group. People turn up in their cottage kit for sessions and stuff, and they warm up and down in their cottage kit. That a sense of identity that we all would like to have. I mean, it's all part and parcel of the culture of the sport. You know, it's a small sport. Everybody knows everybody else. And I think this is one of the things I'm very aware of, that, you know, it's tiny in the UK. You know, we're only one step away from almost everybody else. Mm. And that sense of identity we can create through kit is one of the ways, you know, I think is really good, really valuable.
Yeah. Look, on that kind of identity, you've mentioned that you have people from all sorts of clubs. Who is actually coming to the cottage and how are people getting involved?
So at the moment, it's changed in the last 2 years. Since the pandemic started, it's changed. in a relatively positive way, I'd say. So at the moment, say this Tuesday, we meet every Tuesday night in Battersea Park. Front end this week, we had, say, Callan Moody. I don't know if you know Callan. Callan is a Kiwi lad, ran 2:11 at Chester, just behind. That was the race where Jake Smith didn't drop out. Callan was just behind him. So Callan ran 2:11:35, which wasn't enough for the Kiwis to take him to Tokyo. Go figure. Then we also had Reese Edwards down. Reese is an Aussie. He runs for Belgrave. He's the, I don't know if you know Reese, but he ran 2:13 twice in 2021 over the marathon. Really talented athlete. And then we had people like, we got the young lad called, well, he's not that young, but I suppose, Sam Gebrselassie. Have you come across Sam? Sam started running at the start of the lockdown.
Yes.
He's Belgrave, but he didn't run until he was 20. He was 27 when he started. So wow. He's still learning.
Yeah. I've heard the London lot say he's a, especially at Belgrave, say he's a really exciting prospect.
Yeah, he's a really talented young man. And then, you know, we've got people like John Sanderson, who's Guildford and Godalming, but lives in London. We've got Alex Howard, who's Tunbridge. And we've always had a link with Tunbridge. I was Tunbridge as a child. As a young man, I was Tunbridge AC. So I'm one of these people. I've known Mark Hookway since I was about 14 years old. So there's always been Tunbridge athletes coming through because Chris Oller used to come and train with us when he was in London before he went to San Francisco. There's a sort of a core group of people who've been coming almost 4 or 5 years, I think now. I'm aware that there's somebody like Andy Greenleaf. I don't know if you know Andy Greenleaf. He was originally Winchester, then he was a Serpentine. Right. You know, when he first started with the group 5 or 6 years ago, Andy was a single man, and I saw him the other day, and he's now married with two kids, telling me he's not going to race for a few months this year. You know, but he's running. I saw him out running on Monday, life moves on, and people, you know, move in and out of London. You know, like Chris Ollie, another one, he lives in San Francisco now. You know, people come and go, have the approach that if we're always there every Tuesday, I'm always there every Tuesday, and then people will come. It's word of mouth generally. We don't have any direct standards per se, but I mean, I think we've got 12 in 2021, I think 12 of the men ran sub 30 for 10K. So you get a sense if somebody emails me and says, or messages me and says, you know, I'd like to come down, I've run 2:30 for the marathon, I probably would say, well, it's not, maybe not the best group, often because there's other groups for that, you know, and I don't want to take everybody's blow groups apart, but you know, the front end is fast. And we've got a women's group as well, which has been more of a struggle. I mean, Dale Clutterbuck, as you know, who I think you know, he brings Reveille down in the autumn for strength training. The front end of the women's group is a bit sharp. Danny Chatterton comes down. She's coached by Carl Bennett. We don't coach everybody by any means. I coach some of the lads within the group, but there's people who are coached elsewhere, but they just use the group as a means of training with other people, which works really well, I think. So the women, we've struggled to get to sort of struggle with numbers over the years, but we're now making a bit of an effort. I have a young female coach helping me called Maddie Austin. Maddie used to be a decent 800 meter runner years ago, but she doesn't want to race anymore, but she wants to coach. So she's now got her UKA assistant license coach, and she comes down and helps with women, because you can imagine if you want to encourage young women to the sport, then you don't really need an old man like me saying, I've got this running group in the park, why don't you join it? You know, which is another factor, you know, I'm very aware of that. And so we have on a busy night, we'll have 30 people hurtling around Battersea Park, which I'm pleased to see is becoming the epicenter of the running universe. What with Ben Node and Keith Schofield doing their brilliant work in putting these races on, you know, they've got the 5 mile before Christmas, and we've got the 5K in February. So,
yeah, I think it's going to have a race there every month soon, isn't it?
And it's good. Have you ever run in Battersea Park?
No, I haven't, but I've obviously been to Battersea Park, and I know the loop that you guys would run around, and I do think it is a great place to host a meet. To be fair.
Yeah, it's, I mean, and it's because the trees protect you from the wind and stuff like that. It's decent, and there's a slight camber on the road, but it's not the end of the world. You know, you can run fast. The surface is smooth. And I'm astonished. You know, if they had a park run there, and there was talk about having a park run there, it would be a very quick one, quicker than Dulwich.
That is supposedly the quickest, isn't it, Dulwich?
Dulwich is quick. Dulwich is another really nice surface, It's got a slight gradient in it, but nothing that you'd notice if you shifted. Yeah. So that's why Alex Yee ran so fast there.
Mm. But also, just picking up on Maddie Austin coaching, I think that's great, because I did see something this week saying about the lack of, you know, female distance coaches and just female coaches in general in our sport. So it's good to see that, you know, someone like her is coming through.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's partly how I see my role as well, in a way, is that I want to help, you know, that's the way that it should work, that I should be there trying to help encourage other people and supporting them. And it's, none of this stuff is easy or straightforward, as we know. And it's a commitment. And I think most of us underestimate certainly I underestimated the coaching commitment. But it's, you know, it's not without its benefits. You know, there are, you know, so many people putting in a lot of effort into the sport, and they're generally invisible, aren't they? As you say, that's why you've got me on. It's a bit like nobody knows what's really going on. And I meet, there's so many people I meet, and they're just investing so much of their time into the sport. And it reflects really well, I think, on athletics in the UK.
It's a brilliant setup. And just talk about your commitment then, and how much you actually sacrifice and put into that group.
I'm never a fan of the word sacrifice, Matt. We all just take choices. That's what I mean. It's a bit like runners. You tell me that, you know, I'm making these sacrifices. You go, well, no, you want to run well. You don't, you take a choice. You don't go to the party, you go to the party. You know, it's like up to you. You know, if you want to run badly, then don't, you know what to do. I mean, it's a bit like, so every Tuesday I'm there at, you know, from 6:30 every Tuesday. We have a Saturday session, I'm there, races, I'm there, you know, and it, you know, you schlep up to Liverpool, you go wherever you need to go, you know, nationals are held wherever they're held. You get around as much, you know, you go to as many events as you can. Obviously the last 2 years have been slightly difficult, but yeah, it's, and that actually has, you know, but there's cost implications, because nobody funds coaches, you know, that we're all there and there is no money for it. Nobody, I mean, personally, I spend my own money on all the travel and all the petrol and all the train fares and everything else. And I think that's fine. I'm fortunate enough to be able to afford it, but it isn't easy, you know, and I talk to people and, you know, they have to be, they're very aware of what they're spending. And then, yeah, the time itself, and then the time building, you know, relationships, time talking to people, all adds up. But when it, you know, when it works out, it works, it's, it pays its dividends. You know, people are, I was out on my bike. I do quite a lot of cycling now. I'm an old man and I can't run anymore. But I was out on my bike on Monday, I think it was. Yeah, that was Bank Holiday, wasn't it, this week? And I kept bumping in. I was in Richmond Park and I kept seeing runners that I know from the group. And it's just, you know, there's something, it gives me exposure to, if that's the right word, to young people, basically. That's probably not the right word, but there's a dynamic there that I really enjoy. Group's really interesting, lots of bright young people with varied interests. They're all working, almost without exception, I think, at the moment. And they work hard. I mean, like, I was thinking about Callan and Reese, you know, they both work within the NHS. You know, Callan ran 2:11 with a full-time job. Reese ran 2:13 with a full-time job. You know, nobody knows who they are. You know, and I know Phil Sesaman of old, because Phil used to be down in train with Ken Pike at Ladywell. You know, Phil has his special arrangement with the NHS and he does really well. It's really good. But, you know, he's not working full time. And I think there isn't enough recognition for a lot of people doing, you know, really well off with these full time jobs. Matt Leach is another one. Do you know, I don't know if you know Matt Leach. Matt Leach we consider Matt Cottage. He obviously lives in San Francisco now, but he, you know, he's coached, well, he was coached by Phil O'Dell when he was in England. He's now coached by Dina Day Evans in California, who's a brilliant coach, I think. And he ran 2:15 and he's got a full-time job at Google. So it's, and these sort of people making these choices, I find quite inspiring. As I think we all do, it's a bit like, you know, it makes it all doable. It much more, is that the right word? Yes. I think that we all realize if people, it's like you, if somebody you know around you has a breakthrough run, you suddenly start thinking, maybe I could, whoa, you know, if they can do that, well, you know, there's that thing, maybe I can do that. You know, I know what they're doing. They're not superhuman. Mm. You know, there's that whole, you know, consistent training over a long period of time and then things happen.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a magic to it. And I think other people doing well inspires the group, doesn't it? I think that's how it works, or how I like to think it works.
I think that's such a good point. And I think you're spot on there. Just when we see these elite athletes who are constantly in training camps all over the world, put in these massive performances. I think everyone's like, great, that's amazing. But like you say, when you see someone who either you have a personal connection to or you know of puts in a lot of work around kind of their full-time job and things, it is even more special. I just wanted to pick up on, you kind of mentioned how you guys consider people to be cottage when they're coached by other people, they're based in other places. Is this, I guess, almost the future of our sport, do you think? So I guess maybe more traditionally it was you train with who you're coached by and that's your group. Whereas now I guess we have a lot more hybrid running groups in the UK.
I think you're absolutely right, Ollie. I think I was listening to your interview with Philly Bowden, who's been down at Cottage a few times when she's been in London. I know Philly, and she was talking about, you know, she's coached by at a distance, and that's not unusual. And I think there's also a benefit we all recognise to just running with other people. You know, it's a bit like if you come down to Cottage and you're a bloke and you know. A 5 minute mile rep appears easy if there's 10 of you just all cruising along at 5 minute miling. You know, doing it on your own, you'd be banging your head against the wall after a couple, and suddenly it's just the fact that everybody moves really well. And I think so that group thing makes a huge difference. You know, somebody who's been coming down fairly regularly for the last few months is Dom Nolan, and Dom Nolan is coached by Tim Eglin, with whom I get on really well. So and as Tim says, you know, that it's like, it's not even worth tweaking the sessions in October or November, because the benefit of just running with other people and doing similar sorts of sessions is sufficient. You know, you could then tweak what Dom does at the weekend or something like that. But coaches will do that because they recognize that it's better for their athletes to be in a group. And as long as you're not, you know, off the front, I always think being off the front of our group is always quite dangerous because you're going a bit too fast. But it's, you know, it is a very efficient way to get very fit. I think the way in which we all sort of work as well, I'm trying to think in terms of proximity, basically, to where you are. So let's just say, so if we meet in Battersea Park, before the pandemic, everybody would just run from work, the city, the West End, wherever they work, they just run down. It's probably 4 mile warm up. It's fine. You know, that's part of it, the deal. Nowadays, people're working from home. That's changing it slightly. But it does mean that there's a like-mindedness. And then, of course, through that, you meet other people who are doing the same sorts of training you're doing. And you have little mini groups that break up. So people sort out Sunday runs. And you know how it works. Runners are pretty sociable. That not long before you've got a WhatsApp group going and everybody's saying, this is what I'm doing on Saturday. You know, who's up for it? And, you know, again, that's... I think that's all part and parcel of the culture where people are friendly and open and everybody's working in everybody else's best interests because they know that's the way forward. We don't have any egos. That's the other thing I'd say about Cottage. We've never had any problem with anybody thinking they were big and special. And I think, I don't know how that works. Is that because as runners that most people are like that? You know, we all know people who occasionally are a bit sort of, you know, can be full of themselves, I think, but I don't mean that too negatively because people should be confident. But I find that the group as a group works really well, and that if that's the culture that we've created, then I'm happy with it. I'd rather that than we had histrionics or anything like that going on. It'd be far too much like hard work.
Yeah, it's an interesting point because do you reckon that's because people do come and go? You know, you have that culture there, whereas when a group kind of settles into its rhythm for a year or two, you have that pecking order, don't you? I think that's when egos start to develop, when you have that pecking order, maybe that pecking order changes and it's like, oh, what's going on? You know, so do you reckon the way people come and go and they only meet maybe once a week, not as frequently, reckon that has something to do with it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And the pecking order is quite an interesting observation because it's about the races, isn't it? I mean, if you were to ask Phil and I why we do it, why we set it up, it's about racing. We're not, right. You know, we're not joggers, you know, that it's about racing and it's where it matters. And so, yeah, if you win the session, so what, you know, it's about racing. And that's how it gets, I think, yeah, how you evolve a pecking order. But they all know what everybody knows what everybody else is doing. They're acutely aware of it. I mean, we write about it every week. I mean, it runs off a Facebook group and we report results and stuff. So everybody knows where everybody is, but it's, yeah, there's this sort of, I think like in most groups, there's this, you don't, you, yeah, there's a bit of banter, but you also realize that you know, you could have a bad run next week. So, you know, you don't want to go too deep because it's a bit like, yeah, right, it'll flip round. I'll have a nightmare. But no, it's a, yes, the evolution as well over the last 5 or 6 years means that people recognize that there's a way of being within the group. And nobody's really over comfortable. I think everybody's always, you know, they're always turning up to train hard, and that's what it is. And it's, I think that's the way it should be as well.
Mm. And how do you go about setting a session, or like you say, for that Tuesday night where you're a bit unsure of numbers? And also, how do you even consider catering it for everyone, or do you kind of cater it for a select few, and just you already know that everyone's going to jump in, whatever the session is?
Such a good question, Matt. Really good question. The detailed answer is that every Sunday or Monday morning, but normally Sunday night, Phil O'Dell and I have a long conversation where we phone each other and we talk about what everybody, we talk about lots of stuff, as you can imagine, and we're good friends, but we talk about what everybody's doing, what they've done, what we think is best, what he suggests, what I suggest, and then we decide what we think on balance is the best thing for everybody to do. We can split it up as well. In the summer, we'll do different sessions. There might be a road session, there might be a track session, and we try and accommodate as many people as we can. That isn't to say it's perfect, but that's the way it works. So I will then post the session on the Facebook group on Monday lunchtime so that everybody knows what the session is. I might even suggest some variety, say, for example, you know, and there's a code we use as well. We use small laps, big laps. We know what that means. Everybody knows what that means in the park. You know, like I could say it's 5 times a small lap off of 90 seconds and everybody knows what's going on. And I might say, if you're racing, just do 4, or, you know, and before big races, if we know who's racing, say Liverpool, we might suggest we'll have a lesser session for those racing maybe, and then we'll do another session, a harder session for those who aren't racing. Because we're aware that if you hammer yourself on a Tuesday and you want to be brilliant on a Saturday, then it doesn't pay to go too deep. And we are all about consistency. We are trying to get as many people as we can as fast as they can get. And, you know, that means sort of 14 minute low for 5,000 in the men's case. You know, it means sub 30, 10K. You know, it's 65 for half, you know, and then sort of it's close to 220 as anybody can get in the marathon, and beneath that, obviously. And there is, as you can imagine, with that sort of pace and with the size of the group, we have slight problems with recoveries, because somebody, you know, 90 seconds for you if you're at the front of the group isn't 90 seconds for the bloke who's, you know, just lost 30 seconds coming down. But it tends to, it's evolved into, people split themselves up, it works itself out quite well. But there is a sort of utilitarian aspect to the whole thing. So yeah, we try and aim for the greatest good for the greatest number, and then people become familiar with who they can run with and where they should be in the group and what sort of session they want to have, where they want to have a really hard one. There'll be people who are very fit who might just sit in the middle of the group because they don't want to hammer it. Generally, I mean, we're lucky because most people have been doing it for several years. They're quite experienced. They kind of know what to do. They know that they won't kill themselves. I mean, I'm there to stop people if I think they're overtired and things, and that's part and parcel of it, and getting to know them means that I can start to recognize that. But it's an inexact science, getting that right, but then it's very important that we do the best we can.
You mentioned there just kind of how I guess the athletes sort themselves out a little bit, and sort themselves into their own groups and things. What type of athlete fits your group the best? I say, do you have kind of a type you look for, or the type that you think you'd fit perfectly with the group?
I don't have any sense of that, Ollie, actually. I just think I think most people identify themselves by dint of their performances and competitiveness, essentially. It's how it seems to work. You know, if somebody contacts me and says they want to come down, then you can look at their power of 10. Mostly I know them, but I mean, it's getting to the stage now where there's people who are international runners saying, can we come down? You kind of go, fine. You know, it's and you know who they are, you know that they know what to do. You know, because everybody's a grown-up, we're not there helping them with their drills, we're not there helping, you know, everybody's expected to warm up and ready to go. So yeah. To that extent, coaching this group is almost straightforward, because the deal is the session starts at 7:05. You know, you can warm up on your way in to be ready at 2 minutes, 2 minutes past seven, or you can get there at 6:30, drop your bag off and go for a warm up then. But everybody's just good to go. Everybody knows that. And as I say, I think the maturity of most of the athletes means that they know what to do. And I say, I'm looking for maturity. I think we're looking for maturity in the group as well. That isn't to say we don't have youngsters, but I think if you've been doing it a few years, you kind of know how to behave, what to do. You know, you know what to wear. I just, when somebody rocks up in a sort of shorts and t-shirt and it's like, -2, you think, hold on, don't you realize what we do? It's like, it's stuff like that. But we don't really have any problem. I think if I've worked out that if somebody can run 14:30 for 5K, you kind of know they've worked out what they're doing. Mm. And that's how it works. It is an interesting question because we don't have a hard and fast rule. And we do let people, if somebody's in London, and often we'll get this, like, I'm in London. Who did this the other day? Josh Lund did it the other day. He was in London and he said, can he come down? Because he met Reese, I think. And he came down and he just did a session. And that was fine because I kind of know who he is. And he knows Phil O'Dell because he was originally Bedford. And people do that quite often. And that works out well. Mm. Because they know how to run in a group. And I think one of the beauties of doing the whole thing for me is how smoothly good runners move. I just love the fact that if you put a lot of good guys together, and girls, women, they just move effortlessly. It just looks easy. And everybody goes, people look at them and don't realize they're doing 450 miling, say, on a 3 mile rep, and you go, or 2 mile rep, I should say probably, but it doesn't look like it's an effort. And I think if you go to Battersea Park on a Tuesday night, where there are now many, many groups, gosh, it's the busiest park in London, I think. You would recognize our lot just because of the way in which they move. And that's the thing. We all know that. You guys will know that too. That somebody who's decent just makes it look a lot easier when they're training, particularly in a race. Often we all fall apart, don't we? I think that's the thing. But it's that way in which people move with a group, I think, is it's something quite magical about it, actually.
Yeah, I can imagine Battersea Park being heaving. Do you have a one-way system around there yet?
No, it's random, isn't it? It's random. See, you've even got Dan Jarvis and Jack Rowe taking their
own. I know, they're taking their club there.
They're there with their Belgrave Run Club, and there's the Belgrave lot as well. And then there's this Nick Bester guy. I think he's got a paid-for group. He's in there. It's just busy. But we make it work, It's I think if you just run fast, people get out your way. That's my
point. Yeah,
so that's how that's how we operate. And we've been there for a while, so people know who we are.
Mm. But you just mentioned there sort of about your coaching. You're not babysitting like you would maybe a junior group. But do you still step in and do people expect some advice from you? And how do you sort of deal with that? Given like they may have another coach, but on the night, how do you present yourself and how do you act?
Oh, well, you probably have to ask them, I guess. But no, I try and make myself available. And I will help people. Absolutely. Mm. And it's just I operate on a common sense approach. Mm. And invariably, I think as a coach, you tend to err on the side of caution as well. Somebody on Tuesday night felt shattered and just didn't want to do the session. And I said, don't have a little jog and go home. It's like don't force it. And from my perspective, being there week in, week out and getting to know them all really well allows me to understand, how they're feeling, what they're doing, what the responses are. And you can, it's all sorts of things, can act as signs, as we know, and you can see somebody just not themselves and you might say, you're right. And they'll say, this happened and this week, and you go, okay, fair enough. Maybe just don't stop then. Don't keep forcing it. And I think that's part and parcel of, I think that's one of the things I've picked up by just turning up week in, week out. You just start to get to know the people and you know how they move and you know how they are. And that's important. It's a bit like, it's like knowing everybody's name, and it's about, knowing when they last raced, or trying your best to know when they last raced, what they've got coming up, and just chatting. I think if there's one thing I try to do is to make sure I'm on top of all that detail as much as I can. And it got so big. I mean, before the pandemic, we were up to, 40 people. It was getting a bit ridiculous. And so in many ways, the pandemic sort of helped us because it slimmed things down. And then, of course, I wasn't you know, then the women were getting sort of, it was hard to pay attention to them as well because there's so many blokes, and that's why we've got Maddie involved now. So, you know, and Phil isn't down every week, but he's down every few weeks because he lives in Bedford. So, you know, it's you are invested in these people, and you do want the best for them. I think sometimes I worry that it may not be the best. It may not be the best thing in the world that we're doing for everybody, because it's, as I say, there's a utilitarian aspect to it. It's not, you know, if you want to run a fast 800, if you want a fast 800, then we're maybe not the best for you. But then, you know, Matt Yates brings Dan Rowden down and his group down in autumn as well for some, you know, so you got more Olympians running around in the group, you know. Dan used to train with us actually a few years ago when he was at university in London. So I like Dan a lot. And I was amazed how he didn't like endurance, because he's such a nice looking runner, but he's not the biggest fan. He's getting much better now, which is obviously why he's from 144. But yeah, so we have Dan and stuff. But it's understanding how they, what they're trying to get to is part and parcel of it. You know, it's, if you're going to run 13:50 for 5K, then there's different, as we all know, there's different ways to get to that, you know, and there's different ways to get to everything. And I think the other thing to, you know, to think about is the way in which, or the way I think about it, is that I can also talk to other coaches all the time. I have no problem. So for example, Kyle Bennett came down for several weeks before he moved to, so Kyle is now the new head of endurance at Loughborough University.
Yes, yeah.
And Kyle coaches Danny Chatterton, and Danny was coming down as comes down. And, you know, so you can talk to some, you've got all sorts of, you know, people like him, he'll come down, chat to him, chat to Dale, if he's down with Reve. I chat to Phil O'Dell, as I say, all the time, chat to all the other coaches. There's lots of coaches out there. Everybody's happy to chat. If you're either the coach of the athlete, or even a generic person, somebody who is a coach but doesn't know the athlete, and you're running it as a, like, a, you know, little one of those sort of exam questions. So I've got this person, you know, and they're doing this, and they're doing 80 miles a week, and they can do this and do this, but they haven't broken 15 minutes. What's going wrong? And I think that's one of the brilliant things about the community, because there is a real community, you know, and people will, you know, put in their hayper. They'll tell you what they think, you know, and you go, oh, that's interesting, because you can't do it all on your own. You know, you can sit there and watch people take a view, but it's, whilst I've been around the sport for most of my life, I haven't got all that much experience, and I rely on other people who've got greater experience or even a different perspective. It's like everything in life, you know, you don't know it all. You're never going to know it all. So other people know a hell of a lot more than I do.
Mm. It's clear you guys are doing some great things, and it's great to see so many people hopping in and out with the group. We actually spoke to Dale, who you mentioned, I think last week, on a podcast, hasn't been released yet, but that'll be out soon. And probably will be out by the time this gets released. But he kind of mentioned to us about your group and said, maybe those sorts of groups should start to kind of be monetized a bit.
Well,
is that something you've ever considered?
Only when Dale like chews my ear off on a Tuesday night, telling me that if everybody charged, he works it out. They'll pay a tenner a week, and they did this and the other. You go, you'd have this much, and you could do what you want, like, with it. And I think that's an interesting view. I mean, one of the bizarre things about athletics, it seems to me, is that the higher up the chain you go, the less money there is. Like if I had a group sort of coaching people to break 20 minutes for 5K, then I could charge them all quite a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know? And we all know that. As I said, there's the markets out there for, like, I want to break, you know, I want to do a 3-hour marathon. You go, fine, yeah. You know, and yet we've got blokes running 2:11 and whatever. But, and that's the, yes. And there's something not quite right about it, I think. And there's a bigger question, isn't there, about the way in which the sport runs, the way in which coaches get rewarded. And I know that UKA are planning all these changes, and there's going to be some people who are professionals, some people who aren't. I don't know how that will work. And I know that some of the coaches at the top end, like Laura Muir's coach, you know, he's well paid, isn't he, apparently? And I was thinking, I do a cycle session at a cycle track once a week, and I pay for that. That's a coach session. Happily pay a tenner, you know, and I use the track, obviously. And I don't think twice about paying for cycling. Each sport has a different culture. Cycling has a culture of people paying for their coaching. I mean, increasingly running does, I think. I'm interested in the way in which lots of people I know who aren't serious about the sport think that paying somebody to help them is the obvious route forward. And I find that slightly perplexing because I'm obviously ensconced in the old world. But Dale has a point. Something will need to change. Part of the problem is that I also have a full-time job. And I could see a world in which I said, fine, let's get some sponsorship for the group. But that would be work. But you know that the time, we all know that all this stuff, you know, you guys run a podcast, it takes time. Everything has this admin effect, so you know, you'd have to get a sponsor, then you'd have to have some obligations. I mean, I spend my time with helping people with their contracts, so I kind of know what all the obligations are, or might be, and it will come. I think it will come. And it, whether it follows the American model or not, I don't know. But I think that, you know, the time is ripe for it to evolve. I mean, are we all caught up in the club system forever? Because it's another weird one, isn't it? I mean, people stay loyal to their clubs for their lives, which is a good thing. But I don't know whether that, you know, that's another aspect to it, because I know that, you know, and I look at all these races as well, like the run through races. And you've got people making money out of racing, and then I'm thinking, you know, I was in the part of the day, and it's 20 quid or something to do a run through race. You know, it's not cheap, but maybe that's the way it's going. Maybe I'm old school.
Yeah, would you ever be hesitant to charge, given you know? Because I think a lot of the time in running, we know people so personally. I don't know what it is about running. I do feel like if you go for a run with someone, you really get to know them. It's quite strange. But and the same with you coaching someone, you know them quite personally. And like you say, you know what, you know, these guys in the group, they're all working full time. You know the hardships they're probably going through, and they're still churning out great results. So would you be a little bit hesitant, you know, to charge? And I think that's the case in quite a lot of kind of groups like yours.
Yeah, I think personally I'm hesitant. I suspect that would be, because my personal approach to anything I try and do is to do it the best I can. And actually, if I'm going to charge people as well, I think you've got to, you almost have to be even better than you are. You have to try. And so there's a personal, you know, you'd have to be on top of all the detail in a way that at the moment I don't necessarily have to be, because it's reasonable to assume I have a full-time job. I've got a life of my own, and I, you know, this is what I do, and I'll chat to you and I'll message you and all this sort of stuff. But yeah, you can be a bit more flexible. I think that if people are paying, they may expect a bit more, or I would assume they'd expect a bit more. There's a level of professionalism, not I'm saying I'm unprofessional, but I would think a level of professionalism is demanded then, you know. And I think, and that creates a sense of there's a risk anyway, I think, that coaches will feel that they may not be doing enough, even if it's only, like, you know, people are paying a tenner a session, which would only cover, you may end up only covering your costs. It's not going to be a job. But you know, if you're getting a train to Liverpool to watch Liverpool, you know, that's still like 70 quid or whatever return, you know. It's like, yeah, fine. And it's things like that, I think, that may be at the very least the justification for doing it. Like, this is my overhead, this is what it cost me to do this. You know, and you know, everybody pays for the track. If we're using the track in the summer, or when we use the track, everybody pays their own fees. And the other thing about the cottage group is that it's not, you know, they're all quite bright people in the cottage group. Everybody's got, you know, everybody works, everybody does pretty well. And they wouldn't think twice about, I suspect, about saying if there's, you know, a fee to be paid, they'd just pay it. I don't know, I'm saying this without even asking any of them. They'll listen to this and go, no, Mark, we wouldn't pay for that.
Yeah.
What do you mean? We heard you on that podcast. Maybe that's what will come. I don't know. Is there not also a risk? Do we all not suffer from a form of inverted snobbery at the moment? I'd be interested in your views on this. So because you don't, you know, the best sorts of people don't always pay. You know, they get well coached by good coaches, and the people who are paying, as I say, are those who you would consider to be people from a different, say, athletic background.
That is a really interesting question, and I think there is a lot of that, because I think you're bang on in a sense that if I found out, or if I was to go to a paid coach or like one of these online coaches, you'd be like, they can't be any good. They're only being coached by, you know, someone online, or they're paying for their coaching, you know?
Yeah.
Where's their old school coach who's been in the sport for 30 years?
And isn't that the thing? I mean, yeah. And do you have to be young and good looking to be able to do it, or charismatic, or, you know, it's like, would you rather be coached by a 6-year-old bloke or by a 30-year-old woman? Do you know, people are that this is, you know, we we all live in a highly visual world. And yeah, people, you know, people have made different choices. And I think that, yeah, it is interesting. I know that I wonder why people pay for coaching sometimes, because, but then, you know, then I know people who ask me for, you know, for help quite often. This is people outside the cottage group, like a random person I know socially, will say, oh, I need to get fit. I'm doing this. Well, you know, what shall I do? And you spend about 30 minutes saying that little plan for them. This is how you do it. And they go, great, great. And you think that's quite a lot of time, you know, it is an effort. I think it will change. I don't know how long it will take, but it has to change, I think, really, because not only will the older people die out, you know, their experience will die with them, but yeah, the market has changed, and I think, you know, the sport is changing. One of the things you guys talk about a lot is, you know, how we market it and how we, you know, what's going to happen. And I think that's really, really interesting. I spend a lot of my time thinking about that, you know, and I, somebody the day, it's like, I don't think the answer is to get it back on the BBC, because I don't know about you guys, but nobody watches the BBC of your generation.
Very you know, true.
It's a bit like everybody's sports, sport watching is almost, they're almost all sports now are niche sports, it seems to me, you know, maybe not football, but, you know, the sports I've got some interest, you know, I've got some interest in lots of different sports, but, you know, I'm almost at the point where I need a live feed. I don't need commentary for sports I like. You know, and I was thinking, you know, the BBC don't do the best job of presenting athletics or cross country, you know, as we all know. And I think that's, so getting stuff more on the BBC, it's like, if I see a 55-year-old bloke tell me that's the way forward, I think, well, maybe you want to be talking to somebody who's 25, you know. And then there's this world in which we're all scrabbling around looking at live feeds, because we will be doing it. You'll be doing it on Sunday, looking at maybe the BMC racings.
Yeah,
it's on a fake. You think, well, this is mad. We're all just, why are we looking at a Facebook live feed? Yeah. You know, for, you know, and you got Jake Whiteman racing in a, you know, it's like quality athletes go racing there. You know, I mentioned Jake, that isn't to say there aren't others as well. I just noticed that Jake's doing a 3000. But blimey, yeah. You know, it's And I think, so we spend our lives messing around on Twitter trying to find links to live feeds. So this isn't working either, you know? And so I assume that we're in a period of change. I think that obviously everything, there's always lots of change, but the sport is going through this process. And it's, you know, it will be painful, I think.
I think we are. And I think, you know, when you talk about, you know, the coaching and I think there's a huge demand for it now. Where... I think the demand is big enough now that we should, you know, capitalize on it and take change.
Yeah.
So I think it's quite good timing.
Yeah. And the other side of things, you say about the demand, I think the other thing that strikes me is that if you're in London and you see a really good man running, you almost certainly know who it is. I will, you know, if they're a distance runner, but yeah. I will see women moving really, really fast all the time. And I will have no idea who they are. I suspect they've never raced. They have no idea they're as good as they are. And really, I think that, you know, I think the talent pool is really deep. And I think people are discovering it. You know, they're realizing that, you know, they don't realize what it takes to run fast. But they're doing it anyway, you know. And I see that quite a lot. And I see it in cycling as well, actually, which is another sport in which I have an interest. But I think that, you know, there's lots of talent. And we are there. It, you know, you don't have to have discovered it when you're 15 or 16. You know, people will come to it later.
Yeah.
And it's also, what does the sport do about finding those people and helping them in to realize that they are talented and there's this pathway and this is how you do it. And these are these races and this is what we do. And, you know, this is, and it, that, you know, we all know people who come through that way. And I think that will start to happen a bit more and more, particularly over the longer distance stuff. You know, as women find they can run, you know, fast over 10K and stuff, then it will keep evolving. There's a young lady in our group, I won't mention her name, but she's come from sailing and she's only been running about 6 months and, you know, she's really, really good. Mm. I think, yeah, and it's just not unusual anymore. And I think, but as I say, it would be Sam Gebrselassie, obviously, is an example of men, but doesn't often happen that some bloke will start running when he's 27.
Yeah.
And then run, you know, 14:20 in his first year. And everybody else goes, how the hell could he do that? But yes, and I think so that's a positive, I think, of the change, because, you know, if you live in London as I do and you move around Richmond Park, Battersea Park, Hyde Park, there are runners everywhere, vast numbers everywhere. And you think, okay, this is interesting, because it's good. You know, we want runners. And are those runners, as I say, some of them are very talented. How you move them into the system is another question. You know, as I say, you can't have me going up to somebody and saying, look, yeah, you look good, you know, you're a good runner. Come, this is how you get fit. But you need to find a, we need to find a way how to do that, you know, and part runs part of it possibly, but it's still, it's not the be all and end all of it. I think there needs to be, there'll be something else.
Well, I was going to say, have you ever considered if you did a bit of marketing and numbers you could have? I mean, I know you could, you know, like we spoke, you know, off air, you quite like it, sort of the underground running scene in Battersea Park. But, you know, have you ever considered, blimey, if I, yeah, I could have 100 people every Tuesday?
Yeah, well, but then you're back to, exactly, absolutely. And we thought about that, you know, because you could do it off Insta and do it really, really well. But
yeah,
but then it's a job. You're a job. It's a job, you know, and we're back to that thing. Like, what's your day job? What's your, you know, but maybe that's the thing. Maybe it's not me, but the next generation will say, actually, this is what we do. We just do this. As I say, we go back, we do it professionally. Like, it's our job. We go, here's the marketing. Here's the, you know, here's our social media. Here's how we do it. Here's our website. Here's these, all the things that would involve a proper organization. I'm not saying we're not proper, but it's a bit like, you know, it's almost formalizing it. And then you would have a possible, you know, you would have a talent scout. You'd have somebody who finds all the people who've, you know, aren't members of clubs who are running fast part runs and in the area and approaches them. You'd have a woman on your team whose job it is to say, hey, we do this, come down here, you know, and we'll help you get good if you'd like to do that. And yeah, I can see that world happening. Yeah. As I say, it's just, there's only so much time. I think that's my defense. But absolutely. And I think that it's ripe for opportunity.
Mm. Do you think there is almost just, it's just two sports at the moment? And you talk about people transitioning into, you could be a great runner. Do you think we just have two sports compared to, I don't know, football, where there's a clear ranking of the top and it goes all the way down and feeds down the leagues, all the way down to your Sunday league. Whereas we just have people who are elite or aspiring to be as close to elite as they can and people who just run.
I think you're absolutely right with that. We have two sports. That's how I see it. And it's a bit like we all know, don't we? If you can run a 14 minute something 5K and you go to work and you say to somebody, oh, I ran 14:30 the weekend, they don't get it. They don't get that. Why would they? You know, they go, well, I did a part run the day. Oh, that's 5Ks and I did 21 minutes and they're pleased. And that's fine. Because running fast is actually hard. It's really hard. It takes years of work. Generally, and it is and there is a divide, I think, and I think maybe it's getting bigger because you know, we all know the people who can do it, and you know, they're all, you know, we all know they're human, but it's it does strike me as being two different sports, and I think that's the way in which it's set up at the moment. I mean, I don't want to, you know, I could talk about, say, the BMC races on Sunday Sheffield, so that's elite, isn't it? Yeah. Essentially, nobody knows that's going, you know, beyond the elite athletics world in Britain. Nobody knows what's going on, or probably cares. Yeah. And then you've obviously got the county championships all this weekend as well, so we've got those going on. So and there'll be some elite athletes taking part in those, and some, you know, some not. And it goes on, and then, you know, the Southerns, the Southerns will be a race where the guys at the front and the women at the front are really, really shifting. And then there'll be all these people taking part in the Southerns because it's a 15K race and I love 15K in a tiny park, but that's another story.
Is it going to be a tiny park, actually?
Sorry?
Have you been there before then?
Yeah, of course I have. Yeah,
tiny park, is it?
It's Beckenham. Yeah, Beckenham Park, isn't it?
I've never been there, though, so I wouldn't. No,
it's not the biggest park in the world you've ever seen. I mean, it's big enough to get... you'll be doing laps, I think. I mean, the start... I can't work out where they'll start it, but they'll be doing quite a lot of laps. Right. But yeah, no, it'll be interesting. And it's quite hard to get to as well, unless you live in South London. So, that's another challenge for everybody. I think that isn't to say, though, that people can't jump across. There are people who jump across. There's a guy in our group who, you know, you look at his power of 10, like, you know, 5 years ago, he was running, just doing park runs, and that's all he did. And now he's, you know, done a 226th marathon and he's, you know, wins halves and stuff. And you think, you know, and he's in his 30s. So people do jump across, and it's, I think if I can help people jump across, then that's a good thing. And I think other, you know, if other people can realize there is that pathway, that you can with an you know, relative amount of consistent effort, improve?
Well, I think that's it. I think a lot of the public, you know, they do parkrun and they don't really consider a world beyond running. And I think running is quite hard to get into. Like joining a club, everyone knows there's football club, local teams, right? And but running, I think they're like, oh, really? What, a running club exists? So I think it's even our club system is quite, like you said, the BMC is quite underground. No one really knows much about it if you're just a normal member of the public. Which means we don't, like you said, we don't really get that transfer. You know, we don't have feeders, you know, especially, I mean, how often do you see someone in their mid-20s join a running club? Yeah. You know, it's one in a thousand, probably. You know, it's very, very rare. And I think that is to do with no one really knows about it.
No, absolutely. And then also, when you know, how are these running clubs set up? I mean, that's really the point that I think I'm quite impressed with Belgrave. And having that run club,
they're doing really well. And that's for me, they're leading the way in club athletics right now.
Precisely, you know? And having Jack and Dan do that thing is actually, I can see how that would work, because I've heard them chat, and you know, they're getting young people in their 20s, and that's kind of cool, you know. But is every club doing that? You know, because it's quite, you know, you need a system.
Yes.
You know, you need, this is the person, you need to understand their session. You know, it's going to take them a while to progress. You know, that sessions are sessions. You know. Because we just assume everybody knows what a session is. We don't even think twice about it. Mm. Lots of other people go, like, what do you mean? What's this recovery?
Interval training.
Do we jog? Do we stand still? Where do we go? What's that? Isn't that really hard? It sounds really difficult. And I think that's part and parcel of the problem that the sport faces. Making those people feel welcome. And I think particularly, let's say, women particularly are running more and more. Are they welcome? I don't know. You know, it's challenging, I think, because it involves time, it involves effort. And as I say, if you started when you're 14, you kind of know what you're doing by the time you're 20, or you've gone to university, you're 18, you know what it's like running groups at university, everybody knows what they're doing. You know, you've met half, you know, you know half the group when you get there, kind of thing. Mm. There's that familiarity with the process. But yeah, and then you've got to realize that not everybody is as familiar. Not everyone realizes that, you know, there's such a thing as like tapering or there's easing down, or, you know, that you don't do a, you know, 10 mile tempo the day before a race, or, for example, you know, like, no, that's probably not what you do. And I think clubs, again, they're all run by volunteers. It's just this goodwill stuff. Mm. It's interesting.
Who's coming out of the group at the moment that we should be looking out for? Is there anyone running particularly well? I mean, you must see people sort of great shape 1 month and knackered the next, but who's taking your eye at the moment?
I think, we had a really good end of last year, actually. Although I think Dom Nolan didn't run as well at Liverpool as I thought he could have run.
Still ran pretty. I mean, he must've been fit. Yeah.
Yeah. He was really, really fit. Dom is, I mean, his application is phenomenal. And I think the best of Dom is yet to come.
Right.
And I think Callan had a setback. He did Rotterdam, dropped out, didn't finish. I think he went, there was a whole problem. That's the other thing you start to realize, that they didn't have a pacemaker who could go at the requisite pace, because the requisite pace is so fast. And so he ends up going too slowly, realizes he's not at the time he wants, so he stops. So Callan's got, you know, he'll run another fast marathon, I hope. We've got people, you know, there's Jack Miller. He won the Southwest Counties on at the weekend. So Jack's running really well, and he's a big cross-country fan. So in the next few months, I think Jack will go well. And there's others, you know, Freddie Heston's been running well. I'm trying to think who else might pull through. But it's, and on the women front, I mean, both Danny Chatterton and Reve have been running really, really well. I'm not sure how we've got Tracy Barlow. I don't know if you know Tracy. She's a regular cottage person. She's away for the winter. She doesn't like cold weather. But hopefully she'll have a good 2022. Looking forward to the year. Look, Sam Gabrielassi, obviously. I'll be interested to see what Reese does. Reese Edwards has never run. He ran once over the country. So I think he's doing the Surreys on Sunday. So that'd be interesting. Yeah, no, it's a. almost never ending. Somebody will come from nowhere in the group. How many counties will we be represented at three or four this weekend? I think Middlesex, Michael Cameron is another young man. He's Scottish. He's been going really well. Charlie Sanderson's another young man who's been running well. People, you know, they aren't at the front of the group, but they're very good runners. So yeah, I'm looking forward to
some names to look out for then.
Yeah.
Look, it sounds exciting, and you've obviously got a lot of races coming up, but look, it's been great to chat to you today. And just want to say, thanks for coming on, and best of luck with all of it going forward.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Mark.